sorry, for the council, the board would like you to, I suppose nobody will listen. For the councillors, the board would like you to just mix up. So,
thank God. So we're still waiting for a few people. If I can ask the incoming board and GNSO council members to take their seat at the table, please, so that we can start as soon as possible. Thank you very much. So we are going to start in just a few seconds. If you can take your seats, please, and we'll get this session underway. Both Peter and Rod will be a little late, but we'll get started without them in the interest of time and keeping to the agenda. So please sit down, take your seats. Operator, can you please start the recording for this session and let us know when that has begun so that we can get this started. Thank you.
Today's conference is being recorded, and conference recordings have been started. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So I'd like to welcome all the board members to our GNSO weekend sessions and our discussions. We look forward to having our discussions with you at every ICANN meeting. So thanks once again for making the time to come and talk to us. As I mentioned, Rod and Peter will be along in a minute. Steve is here now, and as Vice Chair will help get these discussions underway. And we had prepared a set of topics. These are just guidelines that we thought might help frame our discussions this afternoon. We have the topics up on the screen there in front of you, at least some of them. What I propose to do is just to read through the first two topics on the AOC just to get started. These are guidelines. GNSO councillors and board members will no doubt want to jump in and start the discussions on those. But just to put some context in that, the AOC topic that we wanted to discuss reads as follows: the AOC process and outputs to date and the broader progress of transparency and accountability across the range of ICANN processes. And as a second related topic, the AOC's repeatedly stated requirement that ICANN act in the public interest. While there have been some preliminary discussions on such matters, the AOC is now almost 2 years old. Are we able to have a more probing and structured discussion with the benefit of this experience? So, once again, I'll invite anyone that wants to speak, just please raise your hand, and I'll try and manage a queue as best as I can. Steve.
So, let me just say thank you very much for inviting us. We've been closeted, the board has been closeted in various kinds of internal meetings. We know you have some very pointed messages. It will give you some idea of how things have gone for us, that we actually look forward to being let out of the small rooms that we've been in all day so that we can join you in a much more open and engaging discussion. So bring it on is basically. No, seriously, we're quite pleased to be here. Peter asked me to hold the fort or to get things started until he can come. I think most of the board is here and quite eager, actually, to listen and to engage. So,
thanks very much. So who wants to start us off on the AOC discussions? Bring it on being the operative word.
So Stefan, it wasn't clear to me in as you read those are topic statements, but is there a well-formed question there, or is there some message that you want to communicate, or is there, so what's the next step in this?
On these two points, I'd just like to welcome Peter that's just stepped in. On these two points, they are more, they are guidelines for discussions. We do have some points later on that will probably have more direct questions in them. But on these ones, I think they're just getting the boards. The GNSO Council wants to get the board's feeling on those matters which pertain to the AOC as written up there. Jeff, is there any way you can make that bigger? And Bertrand wants to start us off.
No, actually, just on matters of procedure, could it be possible to have a quick overview of all the topics that you want to address, not the substance, but just the headlines?
Yeah, good idea. The second topic that we had down was cross-community working groups. I can just read through them. That might help. The GNSO Council has spent a lot of time recently discussing these groups, and we wanted to make you, the board, aware that we have a drafting team looking at this topic. The reason for our discussions on this is that we're involved, the GNSO is involved in several of these working groups, and we've recently sometimes found it a little difficult to know exactly where we are with them, and we thought it might be useful to have a better defined process for coping with these. So that was one topic. We also wanted just to highlight the fact that the board has recently changed the way it interacts with us, and we just wanted to say once again that we found the interaction as it was when we used to have dinners and social events like we did before very useful. Incoming councillors, for example, found it extremely useful to meet the board members because sometimes they don't know the board members. So that and the fact that we can have discussions in an informal setting, the GNSO Council always found that to be very useful. So that's just really a statement more than the question. And the last point that we had on our little list was, well, I'll just read this out. In light of the DNS becoming a function more visible to and scrutinized by governments and business on a global basis, and the size of the market about to be created by the new GTLD program, has the board begun to assess how this might require changes to ICANN ethics policies? So I hope that gives you a framework, Bertrand, and once again, unless Peter, you want to... So I suggest we start with the AOC, but I think we don't have to take these in order. Just hoping someone else is going to speak, because this is going to be very boring.
We can speak to any of them, but on the last one, the revolving door, actually can say some very specific things. I was very concerned, just personally, I was very concerned about exactly this. I don't know where those words came from, but they echo notes that I send internally. We had a pretty vigorous discussion and consideration of this. The bottom line is that we actually have very strong processes in place inside ICANN. There is very, very little in the sense of an ethics issue with people leaving and going to work elsewhere where they can take advantage of inside information and get any kind of leverage that wouldn't be available outside. It's a separate, perhaps legitimate question about whether we're going to lose critical staff and brain power and so forth. But from an ethics perspective, which we take very, very seriously, and really various people will be able to attest to it, we had quite a strong consideration of exactly this question, that we're not in a risk position of, you know, like if we were government regulators and we are handing out a contract to somebody and then somebody goes to work there and so forth. And so those of us who have had that kind of experience, worked in government, considered all this. We had a quite strong discussion then. So that's, I think, as much as there really is to say about all that. You know, it caused a little bit of consideration about Are we compensating our people properly, and what are the internal morale issues and so forth? But with respect to the legitimate damage about whether somebody could take unfair advantage, there's not any substantial issue there.
Thanks, Steve. Rita.
Thanks, Stefan. I'll just respond to Steve, I guess, or augment that. We'll take the last topic first. I think it's an excellent point that we should talk to our legal staff about. It's showing the, I think, maturation of the organization as a whole. Confidential information is something that most corporations deal with quite regularly. And I think ICANN doesn't really have stringent policies on that, meaning what is confidential of the organization that an employee cannot take when they go somewhere else? Right, we can't say to someone the knowledge of how ICANN works is confidential and you can't get another job. In the U.S., that's called a non-compete, and there's very strict laws about what you can do to restrict someone's livelihood. But there are also equally strict laws about what is confidential information. So one of the examples we as lawyers like to talk about is the formula for Coke, you know, the ultimate confidential information. What the heck is in there besides sugar? You know, no one knows. Very heavily guarded secret. But I think that is something that we should task the organization with. So what do we consider as a community confidential information of ICANN? Because I don't know that there's something as specific as the Coke formula, but I think it is an important criteria and should be thought through with the help of our legal staff.
Thanks very much. Tim.
Yes, Steve, I appreciate the comment, but I guess my question is, you know, you say, well, we've discussed it strongly and we don't feel there's a problem, but, you know, is that because you don't feel any policy or rules in that regard are necessary within ICANN, or that there's some exist and we just don't know what they are, and if they do exist, can we know what they are?
Let me drill down and give the next level of detail. We don't have a Coke formula. Which we did. It would solve a lot of other problems. We do understand that information that we get from registries, registrars, and contracted parties contains quite a lot of confidential information. That information is handled very carefully. And so I hope, Rita, you weren't suggesting that we don't have good policies in place for that. I think we do. Have those, but they're worth reviewing and going back and making sure that we've tightened up that as well. We certainly do want to go and look at the next level of detail about our processes and about our information handling, and ask this question again, and it is on the agenda to go do that. But from a broad perspective of are we at risk by having individuals who are currently working for ICANN going and working for prospective applicants, and does that put them in a position of taking unfair advantage of the process? The answer to that, we believe, is no.
Thanks, Steve. I had Ray next. Tim, do you want to? Yeah.
Thank you. Further amplify what Steve has just said, there is in place and confidentiality non-disclosure agreements that employees sign as they would in any organization. The very fact that the processes by which people are going to be applying for GTLDs are open and transparent is something else, and which actually goes to the whole idea of ethics, because you can't have behind-the-scenes backdoor deals. Now, certainly some people may try that, and those people, if it does happen, we have to have safeguards in place, and I do know that there are some things in place that where processes are looked at. So that, you know, if people are concerned about the fact that somebody's going to quit working for ICANN and go work for Company A and then get a backdoor deal to get a GTLD through real quickly, that is the real low-risk outcome, because that's what Steve is talking about when we don't see risk. It's, you know, the proper use of non-disclosure agreements and the proper use of open and transparent processes and appropriate punishment for people that violate those things takes care of it. And certainly, and I, it's well worthwhile that from time to time that the senior staff, Akram or Rod, conduct a review internally of their processes and make sure that things are in place, that the lawyer does his work, and so on. So I would not like to keep on going on this because I think we're in the mode right now of trying to build up a mountain where we don't need a mountain. We have other important things to talk about.
So I have Tim, Peter, perhaps you want to just come back on this?
I wanted to close this and move on, so when you're ready to do that.
Okay. Unfortunately, others don't seem to be, but Tim and Christina and Jonathan wanted to speak to this, and perhaps and then we can move on.
Yeah, I guess I'll pass. Clearly, it's not something that they really want to discuss, so thanks.
Jonathan?
Stefan, I suppose I was thinking of this in the context of maybe the broader issue that it sits in, which is probably best practice governance. And I suppose I had two questions on that. Was really, one, had anything changed in that respect in recent times, and or is anything envisaged for, you know, in terms of an aspiration to develop future best practice governance? It's really it's in and around the ongoing aspiration for the organization to work to what best practice corporate governance might be. And this is really just one example issue which I would say fits within that bigger picture.
Christina.
I just really wanted to get confirmation that what I'm hearing is what you're saying. And what I'm hearing is that the board views this issue very seriously and has discussed it, but that the limitation of those discussions has been to the application and use, or misuse rather, of confidential information by employees.
I'm nervous because I want to say yes, and yet I sense in your question that there's something broader that I may not be catching. Ray said what I only implied but should have said directly, that if you take a look at the applicant guidebook...
Please enter your numeric passcode followed by the hash sign.
Yeah, come on. Come on, Steve.
Yeah, if you take a look at the applicant guidebook, that is a you know, whatever criticisms one might have, it drips with an absolute intention and effort to make the process well-documented, explicit, and transparent. And an awful lot of the actual work is carried out by contracted parties, evaluation panels, and so forth. So we first worrying about this and then rethinking about it came back to the point that there is not really much leverage available to people who leave to take advantage in an unfair way. And the context is, as we are focused a lot on GTLD launch process, that's the context in which this question comes up. I suppose that there's a broader context in which, over a long-term period, whether or not we're creating opportunities for people. But in some sense, it's a good thing. It's a hallmark of a very fine place to work, that people come, learn, and become more valuable out in industry for that. So that's not necessarily in and of itself a bad thing. It's only a question of whether it causes abuse of the processes.
So I have Bertrand, Rita, and Katim.
As Rita said, this is an indication of the fact that the question is raised is an indication of the evolution of the role of the organization as it moves into something that is more a rule-setting and regulatory function, whether we like the expression or not, and also the fact that we are entering a new phase, which is a phase of implementation of a program that has been developed. And so the functions are going to change, and there are actors that will have to interact with ICANN in a way that they didn't interact before. So that's the first point. It's because we're getting into a transition that this problem is now brought to the fore. The second point is Rita highlighted also an element, which is that there are different dimensions to this. And if we want to not belabor on this, we should not continue the discussion. But it's clear that the question of confidentiality on information that could be obtained during, for instance, the processing of applications is an element that will come into the picture in the future. Potential bias in treating applications. We believe that the process that is being put in place is removing evaluations enough away from the actual staff to prevent that kind of thing. But we can go on in subdividing the different dimensions if we discuss that further. The other point, very quickly, is that there's a clear element that we have to take into account, is that you don't change existing contracts just like this. So there are contracts, and any rule that were to be taken into account cannot be introduced just at will, if there is any rule that has to be put in place. And finally, there's another problem that I think we haven't included in this discussion that may be worth considering, is the collective danger for the community as well as the organization of a sort of a rush for talent where all the potential applicants were actually sucking out the competence inside. The reason why I raise this is because it is to make people aware that it is a collective benefit to keep during the application process this talent inside the organization so that we can grow the pool of resources, but it is not depleted. The risk is that on an individual basis, applicants may be interested to poach resources. And the question I want to ask as a conclusion is, it's very interesting you raised this question. Could you explain very briefly why it has been brought inside the GNSO? Is it because it is a fear? Is it because you hope that there are rules that would prevent a sort of arms race between the different actors? What is the background? Because it's very important also for the discussion to know.
Thanks. Does one of the GNSO councillors want to answer that? Tim or John?
I can answer it from my perspective, and it's not just in regards to new applicants. Maybe that's where there's a little bit of confusion on my part. I think, you know, at GoDaddy, we've been concerned just in general with, you know, the size of ICANN staff, the number that have exited over the last year, and then looking at where that staff has gone, and it's raised some issues with us. And we don't have to call ICANN a regulator if we don't want to. But the bottom line is that the effect is very much the same in many cases. We deal with policy that is enforced upon contracted parties who do not have a choice about whether they implement it or not. So call that what you want. It opens up an opportunity for exiting staff to perhaps have, you know, an inside hand at influencing that policy or vice versa. So that's an area that I guess we've been more concerned with more than applicants getting some sort of edge coming into the process. So I think it's a broader concern on our part than what I think we've been discussing.
Thanks, Tim. Rita?
That's really helpful. I was actually going to suggest that you guys send us what you're talking about. We just hear anti-revolving door policy can mean a number of things. So I think of it as confidential information. That's really helpful, Tim, in terms of influence. But as we've said, I think this is something that should be iterated. Finally, Jonathan, in terms of best practices, the good news is that the corporation, I think, does engage in best practices having NDAs. I don't know that we have any non-competes, but we take this seriously. That's why I think also getting a finer point on what we're talking about here maybe will help to create the next gen of those documents as we move forward as well.
Thank you. Katim?
Thanks, Stefan. I frankly think, and pardon me here for probably being naive here, but I think we can do better than this. I think we can do better than saying that, yes, we've listened to you, yes, we've talked about it, and yes, we don't think it's anything serious. You shouldn't worry about it. Trust us. What I'd like to do is open the door a little bit further than Rita has just done. Let's just do something beyond asking you to write up what it is that you are concerned about. This is a community that's built on a multi-stakeholder process, and I think this is, it seems to me, what I'm gathering from what I'm hearing, that it's an important issue enough for you to bring it before the board. And I think what we ought to do here is to set up a consultative group, working group, or joint working group, whatever you want to call it, but some mechanism to have people really look into it that includes also participation of the board as well as the GNSO Council and other interested stakeholders so that, one, at the end of the day, we're going to have a best solution to the issue that we're facing. Two, people would be satisfied that it's been given the redress that it needs and in a very transparent manner. And, of course, whilst we're at it, we might also look at the possibility of including other issues that basically come about by virtue of the fact that we've been blindsided by some of the things that probably were not anticipated. It's taken us, what, since 2008 to develop this process, and it's only now that this issue is bubbling up. So I think this is probably a right opportunity to really consider the possibility of setting up an entity to actually consider this in a consultative manner. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And until you said joint working group, I was fine, but then I started to sweat a bit. Ray, do you want to reply to this?
Yes. First of all, let me state one thing. Having been the CEO of Aaron for 8 years, I've lived through this exact thing you're talking about. ICANN has been having the same consideration for as long as it's been in existence, because it has been processing information, has been processing changes to the root zone, it's been doing a lot of things. And so there's nothing new here. The only thing that's changing, perhaps, is going to be the volume. Okay? It must be recognized that there is no school that exists that teaches people how to apply for a GTLD. There's only one training academy for that, and that's ICANN. Okay? Same thing was true when I was running Aaron. There was only one school in North America for how people could obtain IP addresses. It was Aaron. Okay? Did I lose people? Yes. Did they try and come back? Some of them did. Some of them didn't. Okay? The point is, it's a fact of life. You have to live with it. Okay? There are processes that are in place. There are non-disclosure agreements that are in place, and it certainly is well worthwhile from time to time for the CEO to conduct an investigation or a review of those processes to make sure that they're fine. I don't see a need to conduct any kind of a joint working group or an in-depth investigation of what is really a non-problem. Certainly, if you want to have a small report or a letter from the CEO that says, here's how we deal with this this particular circumstance and here's how we govern employees, that's fine. But there are certainly a lot more things on the table that are very, very important. And I think we're in the process right now of creating a big mountain that we don't need to try and climb.
Thanks, Ray. I had Adrian, and perhaps you can use the joint working group quote to transition this into that discussion.
Thanks, Stefan. excuse me. I think that potentially there's more to this conversation, and it's not just around necessarily the nefarious use of insider knowledge. And that someone may know the inner workings of ICANN. Domain name IP, as Ray just said, is going to be at a premium. And unlike Ray's previous business, it's that we have a nexus. We have a point in time that we're working and building towards. And as we get closer to that, as we get more folks that are educated through the global communications campaign, as we see more interested parties, the requirement and need for folks to reach out to those that know that have this IP is going to be built more and more. And that is going to be at a premium. And it will be the registry providers that are out there, like myself, that will start running up short with, by way of our consultancy offering that we're doing to support applicants. And I'm going to look for where I can get some more domain name IP from. And I'll go to ICANN and I'll get them. Because I need to ramp up some people very, very quickly that know about this new GTLD application process. And I'll pay big dollars because there's big dollars out there. So I won't talk around it. I'll be explicit about it. And hopefully you'll understand is that if you don't do something, I will poach all your good people. And you have a lot of them. You have some damn good folks that have spent a large part of the last 5 years honing their skills, and I want them. So make no mistake about it, and I think it is an important issue, is that you need to protect these people and make sure that they stay within the inner sanctum in order to deal with the tsunami you're going to get. Thanks.
May we quote you in our recruiting?
Just a very quick reaction to that, Adrian. Clearly, that's not an ethical issue, which is how this question was originally framed. That's a staff retention issue, and that's something that the CEO, Fitzgerald, has been raising with. Well, we can confirm that the CEO has for some time been raising that issue with the board.
Bruce, and then Rosemary.
Yeah, I was just going to sort of reinforce, Peter's exactly right, that's a normal issue in retaining staff. There's obviously two elements. I think I gather from some of the implications is that you can somehow contractually restrict staff from leaving one organisation and joining another. There's a lot of limitations, and I think Rita and others have pointed that out. That's not as simple as it might sound. So that's the stick, if you like. You know, how do I stop someone doing something? The other side of it is the incentive side, which is how do you encourage people to stay with the organisation? And that's definitely something the board and the CEO is looking at.
Thanks very much. So can I ask Rosemary to lead us into the community working group discussion, please?
Thanks, Stefan. Yes, and I think probably that I want to actually join a couple of these topics together because that's the way I see them. So if we could just scroll back down so that we see the AOC issue as well as the cross-community working group issue. We're talking about public interest in the first point and the role of AOC processes and output. And then in the second, we're starting to talk about an issue that has really been concerning us at GNSO, and that's the cross-community working group and our experience using that process on a couple of really important issues when we weren't really clear about how those groups work. And in this context, there's also a kind of a bit of a sub-theme of the board reaching out with issues, and the one that I'm most involved with is this issue around what do we mean and how do we measure concepts like competition, consumer confidence and consumer trust and choice. And that issue is thrown to a number of elements of ICANN. So we then think that we're looking at a cross-community working group process to deal with that issue. So that's perhaps enough background, Stefan. It's something that we're just mulling over and I guess muddling through at the moment. But it's something that, from our read, we see the board using more of this approach on these wider, broader issues. So we wanted to have a bit of a chat about that.
You look puzzled.
I'm informed but no wiser by that introduction. Can you be a little bit more specific? You mentioned the board reaching out in relation to consumer trust and consumer choice, and I have just no idea what you mean.
The reference is to the board resolution from Cartagena in December 2010, where the board identifies competition, consumer trust and consumer choice as issues requiring review in the context of the new GTLDs under the auspices. God, I'm sounding like a lawyer now. Under the auspices of 9.3 in the AOC. And you can tell that I've been working on it because it just rolls off the tongue. And that board resolution came to CNSO Council in January, and we had a bit of a discussion about it because we felt that we had quite a bit on our plate in terms of our policy development processes that we were managing, that it was a big and complicated issue, that it needed staff resource. The staff said, hang on, you know, we've got all this other stuff that we're doing. So we dealt with it one way or another to the point where we've scheduled a workshop to discuss these issues at this ICANN meeting. But out of that, I think, and this is just me, I think we're headed in the direction of another cross-community working group, and that's a vehicle that we have had some trouble with. And I think the joint applicant support working group is an example of an issue where there was general and shared commitment to the issue, but quite some difficulty for GNSO with the process. So I hope that's been a helpful clarification, and if not, someone else might pick up the baton.
Well, I'm not only more informed now, but I'm slightly wiser, I guess. Thank you. I'm still not sure what you're asking for, whether you're talking about a scheduling problem in relation to the board asking the GNSO to do things in general, or whether you have a specific issue in relation to the nature of cross-constituency working groups and want to develop different bylaws for those, or whether you want to talk about the joint applicant support working group.
We are mixing, as Rosemary said, two of the issues that we had up on the board on the screen together, but you want, I think you wanted a bit more precision, and Jeff is the man that provides the blunt of the GNSO's precision.
So for the sake of bluntness, thank you for referring to me. So two distinct issues we've had, and I think you've kind of touched around it. You know, one is the issue of the board giving work to the supporting organizations without actually checking to see if the supporting organizations have the resources to do the work. And also on the back end of that, after giving things to the supporting organizations to do, not providing adequate context for doing those things. And I think the consumer trust was one where we all scratched our heads. We all saw the resolution in Cartagena, and then it was like, okay, GNSO, here's our resolution, do it. And we all went, what the heck did they ask us to do? And it took several months to actually get a response. And by the time we got a response, and thanks to Bruce to responding, it was almost the deadline to actually get our work product to you. So I think one of the things is kind of a practical issue of we need to, when the board wants to give the supporting organization something to do, have some sort of liaison with the supporting organization to make sure that it's able to and understands what it's being asked to do. I think that's just a practical issue. The second one is that we're grappling with now is this, with the Jazz Group is one that brought it out, is that we had a cross-community working group or have a cross-community working group where one of the groups involved referred a report to the board before the other supporting organization actually had a chance to adequately consider it and do it, and the board was already seemingly, or discussions were taking place between the board and the GAC, already dealing with that before the GNSO still has had a chance to look at it, and so there's a fear of some of us that we're being supplanted by these extra or outside policy development processes. And I'll use something that I said during one of our GNSO sessions. I think a lot of what's happened in the new GTLD process has thrown the whole notion of policy development process on its face. It's kind of thrown it upside down. There's a lot of things that we've done in the last 2 years that have not been documented process-wise or not are not consistent with what has happened in the past, and we're struggling to deal with that. And so that's kind of what we're exploring. I hope that was blunt enough.
No, that was actually very restrained for you. But I will just add just one extra bit of context. Another group that we had problems with was the JIG, where it worked in reverse. That was a cross-working group with the CCNSO, and we actually sent the report before they'd had a chance to consider it, which upset them, so we had to back step a little bit and work together. So all that we're saying is we're confused, let's put it that way, by some of the process aspects of these joint groups is confusing us and is making our life a little bit more complicated. Bruce, please.
I think what you're struggling with, firstly, if the board's asking for input on something, it asks for input on the strategic plan, it asks for input on the budget, asks for input on the operating plan, then generally passes that request on to the different parts of ICANN, and usually it's the staff that perform the role of consolidating all those inputs, doing some prioritisation, and then recommending something to the board for approval. So that's sort of one aspect of process. The other aspect is when you're actually asking for policy development, and policy development on a particular topic, let's say it's generic top-level domain names, would normally be referred to the supporting organisation. That supporting organisation is in charge of managing that process and should present something to the board that has community consensus. I think what we're struggling with on a few of these items, we'll take the applicant support as an example, is instead of having one body that's sort of the focal point, let's say, or the lead on the topic, and that body leads it, we're sort of getting situations where it might be an advisory committee and a supporting organisation. Both groups are really keen to create some input on it, and then an ad hoc process is used to try and merge the inputs from those two bodies together, and there's no real formal structure for doing that, because the way the structure is at the moment is that the supporting organisation presents a policy to the board. The board can seek advice from the advisory committee. Then the board somehow tries to deal with that advice. So I think you are identifying a process problem there, where we, especially as groups have got bigger, like ALAC is pretty substantial. How do ALAC and GNSO work on an issue? Who does take the lead? And how does that information get presented to the board? Because it shouldn't be the board trying to take an input from two parts of the organisation and the board trying to do a merge. That we should have a lead for a particular topic, whichever supporting or advisory committee that is, and that group takes the responsibility for consulting with the different parts of ICANN, and that group brings something to the board, which is what I'm using very general terms, is a community consensus. So I think that's something, you know, you guys need to partly work on with coming up with, particularly for generic names, how you do interact with your other parts of ICANN to present a consolidated view to the board. The board shouldn't be then having to do, you know, point-by-point negotiations, which is where we are with new GTLDs. You know, the board's basically having a policy negotiation with the GAC, when it should really be the GNSO that's doing that and bringing something to the board that's a consensus.
Thanks, Bruce. So I have Rita, Bertrand, Bill, Jonathan and Sebastian.
So I guess my first observation is I'm really sad that you all have gotten wise to the fact that we love to throw these really esoteric, difficult issues to you guys because you do good work on them. I think that what I was hearing was that we need better staff support as well, because the GNSO is completely stretched thin. We've heard and I've read for 6 years on the list now how difficult it is for you guys to manage, and I do think you do an amazing job, but I think we need better staff support. And I know that we have asked our CEO in terms of prioritization, and we've had many discussions at the board level because these issues suddenly come up, we throw out a resolution, and then where does that come in the hierarchy? And there's only so much money for everything. I mean, I'd love to have a new fund to help to keep Adrian out from poaching employees, but, you know, I'd love to pay everyone lots and lots of money, but where do we get all that money from? So it's kind of a vicious cycle, but I hear you, and I think this is a problem that I'd love our CEO to take up, which is how do we deal with workflow? How do we deal with a board throwing out a resolution and assigning staff to help out here? And prioritization, I know you guys have talked about in the past just in your GNSO workload, and I think we need better communication between the board and you all and what we think is really important in timeline. Next is this cross-constituency, and we've touched on it now with the Jazz Working Group. I think that was the flagrant example recently of why is the board getting something from ALAC when the GNSO hasn't discussed it. So I guess the question is, how do we get this better process? Is it a PDP that comes in? I think that naturally this is iterated and become a problem because I don't know that I can say I'm happy to see. The GAC has been engaging a lot more lately on some of the nitty-gritty of some of these issues. So how do we integrate that into the overall process? The ALAC has matured considerably. How do we integrate that into this process? So I do think it needs some policy development. And is that something you guys think you can do? Make a PDP to augment these roles? Is it a chicken and egg? How do we get there?
So one of the reasons we had this topic was to make you guys aware that we already have, as I said earlier, a drafting team that's looking at, and Jonathan will probably speak to this, in fact, Jonathan's leading the drafting team, so I can possibly hand the mic over to you just so that you can explain what the drafting team is doing for the benefit of the board members.
And brief comment going back to where Rosemary was I think what perhaps if I can say that the theme there was something to do with interaction, effective interaction with the board. But as far as effective interaction with the board is concerned and these cross-constituency working groups is concerned, that's what I wanted to say, because there was a sense starting to percolate up that there was confusion. To some extent, there was clearly a well-known issue with respect to how the Jazz that's been touched on now. But we are actively trying to produce some form of consensus and common understanding within the GNSO as to how we think that these CCWGs or community working groups might work effectively in future. But I think implicit and what should be explicit in that is a recognition that it's not just a GNSO issue, obviously, because it is, by definition, a cross-community issue. And so our objective now is to make sure we are not confused and we have a view on how that works, but with a recognition that we'll need to reach out beyond the GNSO for that to become a more broadly sorted out as to how these thing, how these groups might function effectively in future.
Can you do a cross working group to figure out how to do a cross working group?
That irony hadn't been lost on me. Perhaps that was the best.
We'd actually given that some serious thought, Rita. Bertrand.
I understand the, and I've had many discussions with you and others regarding the procedural tensions that have emerged from using this new tool. Fundamentally, this is a format that has emerged almost spontaneously ad hoc to address issues and without any planned intention or any planned and previous procedures to do it. So it was going on in order to facilitate the interaction between the broad community. I remember there was the Rexix group, there's been the Jazz, there's been others. And I think for all the participants and for the community as a whole, the format has proven to be useful. However, it is true that it is raising very interesting questions regarding is this a new tool in the arsenal of deliberation processes in ICANN? Is it something that is within the GNSO, that is on the side, that is above? Is it risking to replace or go around the policy development process? I understand that this is the concern that the GNSO has, that it is bringing a direct connection with the board instead of going through the normal processes. It is clear that we don't have the answer at this moment, and it's very important to know that you've set up a group to discuss this. And I think beyond the joke, it is really a matter for an interaction. And I think the one distinction that may help move forward is that not every discussion is a policy discussion. Not every discussion is a consensus policy, and not every discussion is really shaping something. Those community working groups can be sounding boards, very limited, just to get a quick reaction, or they can be longer. They can take many formats. But I would strongly encourage that we avoid having discussions in each silo on what those cross-community working groups should be before we discuss that together, because I think one of the good ideas, there's no urgency. The problem is now on the table. Maybe we could have a discussion, an oral discussion in Dakar on that topic with the different constituencies instead of making it a board GNSO discussion. It is a topic that needs a cross-community discussion before we get into formalizing, I suppose.
Bill.
Thanks. I guess I have a simple informational question for board members. In the course of our debates over the general proposition of how these groups should be conducted in the particular case of Jazz, some people have argued that there's a real problem with individual-level communications and intergroup communications between board and members of the Jazz, or the Jazz as a whole, or ALEC, etc. And it has been said in particular a number of times that board members have been confused in consequence as to the status of the reports, the level of community support, and so on and so forth. And I'm just wondering, is that true? At any point, have you been confused as to the status of what was coming from the Jazz or the individual members of the Jazz?
Do you want to do a poll? I can start. The answer is no. We haven't been confused.
Thank you. I just wanted to.
It'll take quite a while if
sure.
you poll all 21 of us. But is that what you're wanting? If we can do a poll around the board, have you been confused, Bertrand? Katim? No. I think the general answer is no. We're not confused. We get a report from ALEC. We know it's coming from ALEC. We get a report or a letter from the GNSO. We know it's coming from the GNSO. So I'd be interested what the evidence is of confusion, because we should stop exhibiting it.
I think it was just a question. No evidence yet. Sebastian's next.
Thank you. I don't know if I need to make a disclaimer, but I don't know what is really this framework. We are the board, but I have no mandate to speak on behalf of the board. Then I am just one single board member. And I used to participate to the jazz group. I used, since I was elected as a board member, to shut up, but to be present as much as possible. And I still think that it's important to still have some roots from what is going on within the community. It's one of the reasons why I still try to have time to go to this type of meeting. One of the problems I saw it when we get to from ALAC and from the ADN, so to charter, and I was really astonished by the answer of the legal within the organization. I would have hoped to have some guidance where to go, because if we want at the end of the day, and you know where I come from, but I think if it's a policy development, even if it's not the title of policy development process, it must belong to GNSO. Whatever I think of what GNSO wanted in the charter and ALAC wanted in the charter. But we are creating ourselves a problem. We don't give guidance at the right moment to the organization when they ask for guidance. That's my first point. The second is that we need to know also who leads, not just at the organizational level, but also at the personal level. And we have some trouble to find enough leaders to lead those working groups. Why we rewash so many often the same people? It's because we don't have the people with the right skill, and we don't have the possibility to train them, to help them, because it's one part of the organization. And the same with the participation or the engagement of the people. I know that all of you, or all of us, are completely participate a lot in multiple of things and spend a long time on each of this topic. But it's a little bit strange to see thousands of people, if not hundreds of people, in the VI group and so little participation in the jazz group. But it's also a way for us to know where are the concerns. It seems that VI was more important than the jazz, and we have also to take that into account. We need to solve the problem of staff. How the staff support you. It's nothing to say that the staff was bad or did bad job, or it's just not enough, not the right skill, not the right moment, not, I don't know, but we have to try to see how the staff will be here to support the community to make the work. And also it's important to think about which tool we have. In the VI, no tools. A good leader, he try everything to help the VI to sort something. He try everything. But it's his engagement who came with tools. No tools exist in this organization to help cross, and even not cross, working group, really. Tools. And there are groups who do better with some tools than others. But that's really struck me. This organization needs tools to allow a work together at this worldwide level. And all that is done by you volunteers, by us volunteers, and nevertheless we do a lot of job and good job. Then I hope that we will be able to solve and help to solve those problems. May I suggest one thing? I agree totally with Bertrand that it's a pity that we start discussion in each part of the organization on subject, and we come with already a solution, and if it's not the same as the other group, it's always difficult. But may I suggest that maybe the board could ask all the AC and ISO to think about cross-community working group, to think, not to decide. And that in Dakar, we had one specific time where all join together and discuss. I come with my decision, but you come with idea and we discuss. It could be one way to go, not to close the issue today and in the near future, but to have some time. Thank you to be so long, and thank you for the...
Sorry. Thank you, Sebastian. I don't think that's what you said, but just to make it clear, I don't think that there's a feeling within the council that jazz was more less important than VI. They're two different groups. One wasn't a community working group. The circumstances are different. Maybe the timing's different. I don't know. And what you said about the overload, our reduced bandwidth getting smaller and smaller probably also explains why... some groups have more participation than others, as you pointed out. So I had a cue, but I know that Chris and Bertrand, do you want to come back on Sebastian's specific points?
I was merely going to suggest that perhaps a face-to-face pre-cross-constituency working group discussion group might be a good way of starting the ball rolling at the next meeting. No?
I'm just waiting for the punchline.
Oh, that Bertrand has that.
Okay.
No, I want to slightly improve the proposal by Chris that we need a small preparatory group that would define the modalities of the face-to-face pre-consultation meeting that we might have in Dakar to set the rules for the charter for the group that will define the rules for those community groups. I think that's the right way to go.
But you're all glad that there's so many French people in ICANN now, aren't you?
I actually support Sebastian's proposal.
I have Carlos next.
Thank you, Stefan. I have a big problem. I'm a lawyer. I support that Katim said that the participation multi-stakeholder is a liminal principle of ICANN, and we are conscious about the importance of participation, of different participation of broader community in working groups. This participation give different points of view, different points of view give us the possibility to achieve a successful result. On the other side, Bruce mentioned the community consensus. I think the community consensus is the key for the solution in this problem. Because if we have a good charter in the cross-community working groups with precise clause, we can see where we can see the scope, or where we have the obligation of each part in this participation in this working group, and where we have every point which could cause conflict. So we maybe give solution at this problem. So I think the point is make a good charter with clear clause, and that's it. And community consensus.
Thank you, Carlos. I have Ching, Zahid, Alan, and Jamie and Jonathan.
Thank you, Stefan. I will try to be brief, and I'd like to take all this topic into a different angle. I think what we have done in the past, at least the past two cross-community working group, we as GNSO Council, we have been very self-disciplined. The reason that I said this, because, for example, if we talk about the JIC, we nearly forward the report to the board, but we say, hey, stop. We should talk to the CC. We should talk to the other part. I mean, even though we know that they are onto a different path of they're having an IDN CCPDP and we are aiming for the new GTLD program just to meet the timeline. So we're saying that there's a timeline, but we still need to wait. Then we sort of hold the report and we have the chair to talk to the CC's chair, and we got that done before the, you know, the timeline or whatever is that. And we've witnessed the same thing at the JES, but we realized that, hey, the other party, they have, you know, have already escalated the report without waiting for us. I mean, I probably shouldn't say waiting, but this is sort of a showing of a self-discipline, and we are not actually confused. We have a good internal process. It's just that it's a matter of defining a external process in a more sort of a flexible way. I mean the reason I put this is there's no, from what I see, a unified way to do it, because we'll have a different, the circumstances would be very much different just across the working group. Thank you.
Thank you, Ching. Zahid.
Thank you. I just wanted to sort of, before we run out of time, focus also on a substantive aspect of Roman 2 up there, which deals with the AOC's repeated sort of requirement that ICANN act in the public interest. And I just wondered whether it's going to be useful and helpful for many that maybe it's possibly time now to define what public interest means in the ICANN context, and maybe also sort of work on any metrics, because it does sort of seem like a very fluid concept, and I just wanted to throw it out there. And I know we're going in another direction on CWGs, but, you know, I just thought I'd mention that.
Thanks for it's good to transition into that. Probably we've got 20 minutes left, and then I'm buying you all a drink, so I'm in no hurry to end this. But Alan's next.
Thank you. I've been in the interesting position as liaison from the ALAC to the GNSO of trying to represent the ALAC position and stances to the GNSO and the GNSO position and actions sometimes to the ALAC. I've not necessarily been a very popular person with either group, and it's been a challenge. But I'm really glad to hear that Peter does not feel that the board is at all confused over all this, because the rest of us are. And in general, there has been a huge amount of confusion within the GNSO about what is going on the JAS group or what's going on in the ALAC, and the same can be true said on the ALAC about the GNSO. We talk about transparency a lot in this organization, but in reality, opaqueness is what we're all about in many cases, and the problems are therefore not easy to solve. Bertrand hit on one of the issues earlier in that, yes, the GNSO is responsible for GTLD policy, period. There is nobody who is arguing with that. But much of what we've been spending the last couple of years talking about is not what we deem policy. In our wisdom, we have said an awful lot of these issues are not policy. That's already cast in concrete. These are implementation issues. And it's not a surprise that almost everyone in the ICANN organization, in all of the various groups and stakeholders, have an interest in how things actually work. So the GAC has woken up. The ALAC certainly has an interest, all in areas that are GTLD related but would deem to be not GTLD policy. Okay, I don't think these are going to be easy things to solve, but it's nice that we're actually talking about it for once and recognizing that we are going to have to talk together and figure out ways of working together. And not everyone's going to end up being happy, because, you know, forgive me for using these horrible words, but we're talking about turf here. And we're not going to be able to divide everything in neat little triangles and sections, because there is a huge amount of overlap in some of these issues. So it's going to be fun, and it's not necessarily going to be easy. Thank you.
Is there a Peter, did you want to respond? No? Okay. Adrian, you wanted to follow up on one of Alan's points.
Yeah, if I could, and Peter, humour me, because hopefully this goes somewhere, but were you confused at all with the GNSO Council report that we sent with respect to the JIG? Did any board members not understand that that was from the GNSO Council?
Remind me what the JIG is again. What's the JIG again?
It's something you got all upset about?
I can't recall any confusion around that, but maybe we've got a worse problem, that sort of amnesia around the...
my point being that we got some stern, I guess from the GNSO Council, we might have been once bitten, twice shy here, that we got some stern words from the NSO, thank you, Chris, and retracted our submission to the board and so on and so forth. So I just thought that, you know, given that you've made it quite clear that the board understands where these are coming from, maybe that's something for us to remember, because we really were a little gun shy then about somebody else sending something to the board without us responding, having a chance to either agree with the contents of that particular report. So I just think it's interesting for hopefully important for the council to understand that this works in many different circumstances, not just with this one with respect to the jazz.
Thanks, Adrian. Jamie's next.
Thank you. I would like to build upon something that Bertrand said and another thing that Sebastian said. I'm playing with France here. The first point is Bertrand said that CCWG appeared as an informal and spontaneous tool, and I agree with that. And I would say that that's because the formal bodies are so formal sometimes that they get stalled. And if I was very glad that Alan voiced something that I was feeling and I was shy of expressing, is that if the board members are not confused, I am. And I don't know where policy ends and where implementation begins, because this is a movable border depending on who is talking about it. So the second point that Sebastian touched is that these new groups add new people to the conversation, and that I cannot agree, because I think like we say in Brazil, the branches change, but the apes are the same, you know, because we are all in the these cross-community working groups are made of the same volunteers you find in the formal bodies. So what is at stake here is that the very informality is what it brings of a new. It doesn't add new people. It adds the way it works, and it works in an informal way. And this is the point. It adds something and it subtracts something, because it subtracts the legitimacy of the formal bodies. That's a concern of mine, and I would like to share with all of you.
Thank you, Jamie. I had Jonathan next.
Stefan and others, I'll try and be very brief. I mean, I think one thing that perhaps is lost in translation here is that there was the starting point was that these cross-community group working groups, from a GNSO point of view, were largely seen as potentially very positive components of the ICANN infrastructure. The concerns I heard expressed and that there was an attempt to deal with were all about process rather than the existence of these, and making sure that there was a continued back reference to, I guess, things like the affirmation of commitments, the bottom-up process, bylaws of ICANN, and making sure that any informal mandates didn't sort of metamorphose into what might be perceived as formal structures. So really, that for me is the essence of it. It was a positive recognition of the good role these can play, but ensuring that it was done within the existing structures were recognized and we were bound to them.
Jeff.
Yeah, I think it's time for me to be blunt just because I think it's more fun. Come on, I got to make you smile at some point, Peter. No? All right. I don't think the question Bill asked you was very fair about being confused, because obviously, who would want to admit that they're confused ever? And B, I don't think that was the context in which our discussion was had. I think the reason why some may have interpreted the confusion is that there is a lot of reliance now on the jazz to solve the world's problems. There's a lot of reference in a lot of the board materials, a lot of the GAC materials, a lot of the ICANN staff materials to the Jazz Working Group. Very little reference to the GNSO. The Jazz Working Group is a cross-community working group that actually is supposed to report back to the GNSO, and the GNSO is supposed to deliver advice to the board. There's been a lot of circumvention around that, a lot of it, and it's documented in board resolutions. Now, maybe that's staff drafting the board resolutions in an improper way, but that's why people are interpreting confusion. There's meetings, direct meetings, even at this meeting here, with the board and the Jazz directly, or board members and the Jazz directly, without going through the GNSO, before the GNSO has had a chance to consider it, and I think that is a problem, again, because people who serve on any working group, they're usually serving in their individual capacity. When I serve on a working group, I don't serve necessarily on behalf of Newstar, because I haven't run everything by Newstar as my company. I certainly haven't run everything by the registry stakeholder group, and I certainly haven't run everything by the GNSO. Things have a natural evolution. It takes time, right? So when things come out of the JAS working group, it has to go back to the GNSO so that we can go back to our stakeholder groups so that to check to make sure that the individuals on that working group actually got it right and we agree with them, and then it has to go to the board. So when the term confusion is mentioned, because we see Jazz Working Group in resolutions by the board, because we see it referred to by the GAC, because we see consultations that we're